This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Just how vulnerable is North Carolina's same-sex marriage ban? The Supreme Court's decision to strike down a key provision of the Defense of Marriage Act opened the way for a number of legal challenges to gay marriage bans. A ruling by a judge in Virginia earlier this year has given same-sex marriage advocates reason to hope in North Carolina. Legal experts say that if the Virginia ruling stands, it could mean that our state's Amendment 1 could be struck down. Jessica Jones is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. She joins us now. Jessica, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you, Frank.
Neil Siegel is with us as well, a professor of law at Duke and director of the D.C. Summer Institute on Law and Policy. Neil Siegel, welcome.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Jessica, let me start with you. Talk about the recent ruling in February, I guess, in Virginia's same-sex marriage ban. That was ruled unconstitutional. Who did that? And tell us about that ban.
That's right. Well, as you said, that case arose in Virginia. And on Valentine's Day, a U.S. District Court judge there ruled that her state's ban on gay marriage is unconstitutional. And that case involves two same-sex couples who filed suit challenging state statutes and the constitutional ban on same-sex marriage in Virginia. So that ruling was appealed, and it's going to be heard by the Fourth Circuit panel on May 13th.
And which states? North Carolina is part of that Fourth Circuit, right?
That's right. North Carolina is part of that Fourth Circuit. So this is a ruling that could potentially affect this state.
Neil, if Virginia's ruling stands that appeal, if the ruling is upheld, how does that influence the rest of the case? I mean, can you read the tea leaves? Is there anything to be made from that?
You're saying if the Fourth Circuit affirms the district court, which invalidated Virginia's ban on same-sex marriage?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, well, then, I mean, really, a lot is going to turn on how narrowly or broadly the Fourth Circuit rules. The district court ruled in a really a robust, full-throated way, beginning the opinion by quoting Mildred Loving, who was the Loving of Loving versus Virginia, the case in which the Supreme Court finally invalidated Virginia's ban on interracial marriage, and ended by holding that Virginia's ban violated both the Federal Equal Protection Clause and the Due Process Clause. So if the Fourth Circuit affirms on those kinds of robust grounds, then North Carolina Amendment 1 is on the chopping block. All that remains is for the cases challenging Amendment 1 right, to respect Fourth Circuit precedent. But there are ways in which the Fourth Circuit might possibly want to rule more narrowly, focusing specifically on the Virginia regime. You've got two statutes and a constitutional amendment. It's really really quite broad. There's a lot of, anti-gay language in the statutes as well as the legislative history in Virginia. That legislators embraced in passing these bans. And so it's at least possible that the Fourth Circuit would want to more narrowly limit its ruling to the Virginia regime, but I wouldn't hold my breath about that.
Well, but the point is there might be language in the Virginia statute and the statutes and amendment that is different enough from North Carolina that you could make a ruling against one and not the other.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard to do it in a principled way, but sometimes when judges face these kinds of divisive issues, they don't always rule in the most principled fashion. Sometimes they give half a loaf. They don't, you know, they don't follow out the full logical implications of their reasoning. So I mean, it's possible, but you know, both states involve statutory and constitutional bans. Both states prohibit both same-sex marriage and civil unions. And so they're both, you know, very broad bans, and I can't think of a persuasive way to distinguish them. That doesn't mean that, right, judges won't come up with one, at least on a temporary basis.
All right. Well, let's talk about the genesis of this. Jessica, let me start with you. This does seem to go back to the Supreme Court's ruling on the Windsor case, where it outlawed at least part of the domestic the Defense of Marriage Act. So tell us about that. Remind us what happened.
Well, that was a landmark case. It was decided in June of 2013, and in that case, the U.S. Supreme Court held that restricting the U.S. federal interpretation of marriage and spouse to apply only to same-sex unions is unconstitutional under the Due Process Clause. And the first interpretation of that case was actually in my hometown, Salt Lake City, and that in that case, a conservative judge struck down that state's ban against same-sex marriage right around Christmas time. And as a matter of fact, on Thursday, that case is scheduled to be heard before the 10th Circuit Court in Denver. So that's really kind of the first case in the queue. But there are over three dozen cases across the country that challenge bans on same-sex marriage. And some legal experts say that one of those cases is going to make it all the way up the chain to the Supreme Court, and that it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
So is that it? The Windsor case, do you think, is that in a way the shadow that looms over all of this, Neil?
I think that's exactly right. I think the court in Windsor, on the one hand, emphasized the traditional role of the states in regulating marriage, which seemed to support opponents of same-sex marriage. On the other hand, robustly endorsed the equal dignity of same-sex couples and the children that they're raising, which seemed to call into question every state ban on same-sex marriage. And so there's something there for both sides. On balance, I think Justice Scalia and his dissent in that case had it right, which is that it's there's so much language there about the equal dignity, liberty, equality of same-sex couples and their children that the court seemed to be almost encouraging further litigation challenging state bans on same-sex marriage, and that's what's been happening. It's district courts, not just in Virginia and not just in Utah, but Oklahoma and Texas and Michigan and related decisions in Ohio and Kentucky. So I think the court itself is probably surprised. They maybe wanted to give the country a nudge, and they ended up giving the country a shove. They may be surprised, the justices, by how quickly things are moving.
Well, tell us about that. What is the language that this turns on that the Supreme Court found offensive, the legal principle that these arguments turn on?
Well, I think the core legal principle is the equal protection of the laws, equality rights protected under the Constitution, as well as substantive due process, the fundamental right to marry. In the Loving case back in 67, the court finally invalidated Virginia's ban on interracial marriage on both grounds, on both independently sufficient grounds, as a violation of equality and as an infringement, an unjustified infringement on the fundamental right to marry. What I saw in the Windsor case was, in addition to that kind of federalism reasoning that I just mentioned about state control over marriage and the court emphasizing New York's decision to allow same-sex couples to marry, you see a lot of equality and liberty type reasoning about equal dignity, equal respect, about humiliating the children of same-sex couples, about the kind of caste regime that the federal ban on same-sex marriage seemed to be reinforcing. That's the language Justice Scalia seized on in his "The Sky is Falling" dissent when he said the next thing that's coming is a decision from this court invalidating state bans on same-sex marriage.
So this is going to the Fourth Circuit, and that is the circuit that includes North Carolina. Neil, what do we know about that court? Historically, or at least in recent memory, that's been a court that has been perceived as somewhat conservative. Are things changing?
They've changed, I would say, decisively. So I actually clerked for a judge on the Fourth Circuit I guess it was 2001-2002, and at that time it was one of the two most conservative circuits in the country. It was really, you had Reagan, Bush 1, Bush 2 nominees on the court next to the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans. Those were the two most conservative circuits, and since that time, we've had some retirements and we've had five Obama appointees. And so there is now a Democratic appointed majority on the court. And it's not close. I think it's the last time I checked, it was something like by, 9-5 or something close to that. And so it's a court that I think whose ideological composition has changed very significantly from the second Bush administration to the Obama administration.
And remember, all of this against the backdrop of a very conservative Supreme Court that outlawed a ban on gay marriage. So things are changing. And Jessica, along those lines politically, I mean, you talked to House Speaker Tom Tillis about the time Amendment 1 was passed, and he sort of saw this coming. His timetable was off a little bit.
Right. He told a breakfast meeting right around that time that in something like two decades, I think that was the figure that he quoted, that a ban against same-sex marriage would just be moot, because because polling shows across the country uniformly that younger generations just don't view the issue the same way that older generations do. And as people mature and get older, things are changing. And I think we're seeing some of that happening.
Neil, what do you think? Is it your opinion that there is a shift in public thought? Now, remember, this the amendment passed by a 60% margin in the state of North Carolina. But is opinion shifting, and is it happening more quickly than Tom Tillis even expected?
I think the answer to both your questions is yes. And I think what's most revealing is when you break this down by age group. So I think the country is something like 80% in favor of same-sex marriage if you poll people under the age of 30. And you get a very different outcome if you poll people, say, over the age of 70. Given that people under 30 tend to live a lot longer than people over 70, you can see where this is headed. It doesn't show any signs of changing. I think it's going to be the case as well in North Carolina. I think the South is going to be, particularly the states in the Deep South, are continue to be most resistant to change. And I think we'll be the last to change. But even there, the demographic trends are such that it's just a matter of time. And what's really remarkable to people who study this is how quickly the public opinion polling, not just in a one-shot kind of way, but consistently has changed, and not just for young people, but majority sentiment in the country as a whole.
I want to thank you both for being on the program. Neil Siegel, a professor of law at Duke University. Jessica Jones, WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Good to be with you.
Coming up, we're going to talk with 2nd District Congressional candidate Frank Roach on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, the broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay tuned.